Well, welcome to Echo Church. Glad you're here, everybody. We're in a really fun series about relationships, and this series matters to everybody because you're either in a relationship, trying to get out of one, or you're enjoying one right now that is awesome. But if you're in that case, you're in good company and also in the company of those that need some restoration. And so we are in a very practical teaching series. I'm glad you're here. It's going to be a great time. Let me start with some participation across all of our campuses today. So Sunnyvale, South, North, everybody together. I want you to raise your hand if you've been here before. If you have ever stepped out of your house and you just smelled poop, like all over your neighborhood, it just smelled like poop. I know it's a deep question, but just raise your hand with me. There is a point to it. And then you stepped out of your house, you go into your car, and it still smells like it, and you're starting to get angry. Like, my car now smells like poop. So you go, you're in your car, and you're driving to work, and you go get all the way to your work, and you go into your office, and it still smells like poop. And you're thinking, my whole city is contaminated with sewage or whatever it might be, until you look down or on you and you realize it was on you the whole entire time. Now, you either stepped on it, or maybe you have kids and you were changing a diaper that morning and that diaper just kind of rubbed on your side a little bit and there's some poop on you. I have 5 kids. I've been there. There has been some poop on me before. I've been peed on before. And you know how that is. And then you carry it with you everywhere you go without your knowledge. And here's the deal. Relationships can be very similar. See, the mistakes... I didn't know that was that funny. But it can be, because all the mistakes, the hurt, all the stuff of our past gets carried into the future relationships, and it just starts to stink up one after the other, after the other, after the other. And sometimes we look around and we're like, it's their fault, and their fault, and their fault, and their fault, but really there's some poop on us. And sometimes the poop comes from us, sometimes we've been pooped on by others, and there's hurts that come from other people outside of us, but it's shaping the way that we do relationships all the time. It's continually shaping us. Maybe you started over with your relationship with God. You've been coming to Echo and you renewed your faith. But then at the same time, you know that there's still the baggage from your past that has come with you into a relationship. Or maybe you started a dating relationship and you know you have a past, but then now you're on a date night and you start to hear about the other person's past. And you're just like, uh-oh, we both have one. How do we deal with this now? Maybe you got married and you've been married a few years, and now thoughts from previous relationships are coming into your mind, and your past is starting to really get into your present. And it's starting to mess you up emotionally some, and you don't really know how to handle that. Sometimes people have hurt us in such a way that we just lose trust in people. And you go from one relationship to another, or maybe even your marriage is struggling because you don't know how to trust anymore, because people have caused you pain. See, we've all been there. In fact, we sent a survey out to people here at Echo and heard over 600 of you answered these questions and asked questions. And we're talking about lots of your questions throughout this series. And it's very serious stuff. And there are some things that they're funny in some ways, but at the same time, there are other things that are hurtful. And you have to face the reality of some pain that has caused your relationships to struggle. And I think regardless today here at Echo of where you are spiritually, there are some things we would all agree on. See, what culture thinks of relationships is not working. There's more depression. There's more suicide. There's more loneliness than ever before. There's more divorce than ever before. There's more brokenness in relationships than ever before. Even now, recently, there's an app that was launched here in the Bay Area that's Rent a Friend for a Day, because people are so lonely. I was driving down the street this week and I saw a billboard for this app, and you can literally rent a friend to run errands with you for the day. See, we've come to a point where it's so broken that we need some new perspectives. And I think we would agree that some of the stuff that has been taught culturally speaking is just not working for us today. See, sometimes the reason it doesn't work is because we're looking for contentment in the wrong places. And next week, Pastor Andy's going to be back, and he's going to talk about this topic of contentment, so don't miss on that. And then the following week is week 4 of our Swipe Right series, and that's going to be all about sex. So if you have kids that you bring into our auditoriums with you, you might want to drop them off at Cool Kids that week. If you have preteens and you haven't yet had the chat, this would be a great time to do that, so it's not super awkward in service when they're like, "Mom, what is that?" You might want to explain beforehand. But today we're going to talk about the past, how to not let the past affect our future in a negative way. There is a powerful encounter that Jesus had with a woman, and we've talked about it before here at Echo, and you might have heard it before, but I want to draw out some principles that are so important that they have actually set people free for 2,000 years now based on this one event in the life of a woman that's called the adulterous woman. If you have a Bible, you can open it up to John chapter 8. If you don't, it's okay. Look up the app, or it's going to be on your screens as well. So John chapter 8, it goes like this. Jesus returns to the Mount of Olives, a place that he would teach often. But early the next morning, he was back again at the temple. A crowd soon gathered, and he sat down and he taught them. As he was speaking, the teachers of the religious law and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in the act of adultery. They put her in front of the crowd. "Teacher," they said to Jesus, "this woman was caught in the act of adultery, and the law of Moses says to stone her. What do you say?" They were trying to trap him into saying something they could use against him. Now, let me give you a little bit of context and pause for a second, because there's some things really important to understand about what was happening. See, these religious people were trying to trap Jesus. They didn't like him. They want to get rid of him. And part of the reason they want to get rid of him is because they were jealous of him. People were following Jesus instead of following them. And then Jesus would often correct religious people who looked righteous on the outside but were hypocritical on the inside. This group of people was in that camp. They were tired of Jesus correcting and exposing their sin. So they're trying to trap him because that's a way to discredit Jesus. Now, Jesus came and he said he came to fulfill the law. And the law he's referring to is this religious law of the day, which these religious people were following. And they knew that if they could get Jesus pinned against the wall to have to choose between obeying the law and being merciful or whatever they're trying to do, then they would discredit him. Now, a couple more things to understand. The religious law and the law of the land in this day and age was intermingled in their culture. And sometimes you read the scriptures, it's important to know this, and it refers to the law, like they came to fulfill the law, or this was according to the law. Most of the time, that's speaking of the religious law. And the religious law was a Jewish law that is actually outlined in what we consider the Old Testament of the Bible. So here, they're trying to pin them and have them be discredited based on disobeying the law. Now, one more thing to note about the law, though, and it reveals their hypocrisy. See, the law actually stated that when someone's caught in adultery, when they're caught in adultery, that both the man and the woman ought to be punished. Deuteronomy 22:22, if you want to look it up. And it's both of them. And it says they were caught in the act, which means there were two of them. It was not just one. It was not her committing adultery by herself. There were two of them. But they left out this man, which just shows you a couple things. It shows you, first of all, they belittled women. And Jesus always protected women, by the way, and we should do the same. Second of all, it showed that they were hypocritical in what they were trying to have Jesus do, because they themselves were breaking the law. So it was really not about the law at all. It was about their bad motives in trying to trap Jesus. Not only that, but there's a principle here, which is sometimes what keeps us trapped is a misunderstanding of truth. People that say one thing that Jesus is supposed to be about, but it's really not what he's about. So it keeps you away from truth. And you might be in this camp that you're like avoiding church, avoiding God, avoiding whatever conversations because of a misunderstanding that you've been taught about who God is. And I'm hoping today we can shed some light on some of that. Now, here's the other part of what's happening. The trap was basically this. It was them saying to trying to trap him in revealing that he might be about one thing or another, but not both. And we often use these two words to summarize these two concepts, which is grace and truth. See, Jesus was known as a compassionate, merciful, gracious leader, but he was also known as one who was truthful and firm and just. They were trying to divide both of these things in his life to discredit him. So they put this woman in front of him and said, Jesus, are you going to forgive her, showing that you don't care about the law and the truth, or will you condemn her so that people will know you're not so merciful and gracious and loving? And they did not know that those two things could coexist, and that was actually the key to freedom. And in this event, we're going to see something really powerful unfold. See, they were trying to make him choose between condemnation and compassion, faithfulness and love, grace and truth. And people will always try to trick us with those things. In fact, it is a constant tension we have to fight. Think about it. You've probably been there. And think about your tension that you felt. You have a spouse that did something inappropriate towards you, and you want to forgive, but you also don't want to let them know that they can get away with it. So do I extend love, or do I hold on to what I believe was wrong or true? Or maybe you're single and you know that there's something that's happened in your relationship. There's consequences and you want to let it go, but you feel like if you let it go, maybe it'll show that they're getting away with it or things aren't being dealt with. And this tension is continually inside of us. I feel it all the time. It's the tension of life. Will you hold on to what's firm and true, or will you be compassionate and loving? And people tell you cannot have both of them. But I think there's a better way, and Jesus shows us this better way. So look at what he does. His response and approach was radically different. It says, Jesus stooped down and wrote in the dust with his finger. They kept demanding an answer. So he stood up again, and he said, all right, but let the one who has never sinned throw the first stone. Then he stooped down again and wrote in the dust. And when the accusers heard this, they slipped away one by one, beginning with the oldest, until only Jesus was left in the middle of the crowd with the woman. Then Jesus stood up again, and he looked at this woman, and he said, where are your accusers? Didn't even one of them stay and condemn you? And she says two words, no, affirming what Jesus says, Lord. Remember that. And then Jesus said to her, neither do I, go and sin no more. See, what most scholars believe is happening here, and I agree, is that Jesus, in this moment, he bends down and he begins to write on the stone floors of this temple in the dust the sins of the religious people. And I don't think it was just any sin. I think it was their adulterous sins. And I think this is why the oldest to the youngest started to leave, because the oldest had the most amount of sins. See, Jesus taught about this, actually, and it was recorded in Matthew 7. He says, how can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of the speck in your eye, when you can't see past the log in your own? You hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your eye, then you can see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. You see, if somebody came on stage at any of our campuses, then they could read minds, and they got a whiteboard, and they began to write slowly here all of your sins right next to your name, I think all of you one at a time would begin to leave our auditoriums. You just start slipping out every direction, including myself, because you don't want that to be revealed. You see, Jesus though looks at her, and he asks this question, where are your accusers? Are they not condemning you? Not one of them. She says, no, Lord, none of them. And then Jesus has this powerful, small little phrase that is so important for us to understand. He says, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. Notice, no condemnation, grace. Go and sin no more, truth. He looks at her and he combines in a fusion, a beautiful fusion of these two characteristics of God. He says to her, go make your future different than your past. You see, you can make a break with your past, and God's blessing on your future will come when you're willing to break away from your past. You face the reality of your sin, and you're truthful, and you don't hide it, but at the same time, you open your heart to God, and you receive forgiveness and his love, and this is how Jesus treats this woman. See, some people want God's grace without his truth. So God, bless me, bless me, bless me. I want to have a great husband, a great wife, a great relationship, but then you want to do things your way. So we want to do it our way. God, I want to do it like this and like this and like this, even though your truth says other word. I don't care really about your truth. I just want your grace and your blessing. And Jesus here is teaching them something really, really important. That see, wherever the truth and the grace of God collide, there is blessing and freedom. But see, to fully understand this, we got to understand the two most important characteristics of God. See, these people's strategy was punish her, Jesus, to show that you have no grace. Or give her grace, Jesus, to show that you have no truth and no righteousness and no justice. They did not know that those two could collide. Now, I want to give you a little example of this. I'm going to illustrate this with these chairs real quick. So hopefully you can see this with me at all of our campuses. Here's what typically happens, okay, in our perspective of God or even of each other or ourselves. There is a part of God that is all true. It is firm. It is completely solid. It is unchanging. He is perfect in all of his ways. He does not change. He is faithful and faithful and faithful. He's always true. There is no lie in him. And there's a part of God that is actually the softer side of God. He is merciful and compassionate and unfailing in his love, unconditional in his grace toward us. And this is who he is. This is the part of God. And a lot of times we feel like we have to pick one or the other. Some people have a perspective of their own lives like this, where I'm just going to love everybody and I'm going to do everything that pleases everybody, but there is no backbone and there is no truth and there is nothing in their lives that is firm. So they're changing forever with everything that happens in culture. You're constantly adjusting your truth because you want to be just about this. Or there's people that live on this side and you can only have so much of these people because they're true in what they're saying, but their approach lacks grace and love and forgiveness. And you can only sit on this for so long. But here's the beauty of Jesus, both firm and soft, both truth, full of truth and full of grace, both unfailing with his love and forever faithful in his ways. He is stable, yet compassionate. He exemplified this in every interaction that he had in his life on the earth. And he was actually revealing a bigger picture of what God was all about. And I want to show you that big picture for a minute. If you have a Bible, you can flip back or you just read with me on the screens. But in Exodus, right in the beginning, there's a prophet named Moses. You might have heard of Moses before or watched the movie that's famous about him opening the sea. But Moses had a powerful encounter with God on top of a mountain. In fact, this encounter he had has historically forever changed every society because that's where God gave him the Ten Commandments, the tablets of the Ten Commandments, which has become the foundation of every society's code of conduct. Don't murder, don't lie, all these things that everybody would consider to be the basic moral standard came from that one event on top of the mountain where God, by the way, with his finger on a stone, wrote those commandments. And then here he is on top of the mountain, and he's having an encounter with God, and he says to God, God, I want to see your glory. Let me see your glory. In other words, I want to see the majesty and the splendor of your greatness. He was in this moment like, I'm in God's favor. I'm just going to ask him. But he didn't realize a couple things. God says to him, look, if your body cannot possibly handle that much greatness, you will die. And then he says, but I'll tell you what. It's hard to understand this, but God said, I'm going to give you a glimpse of who I am. So he comes by Moses, lets him see a part of who he is, enough that he doesn't die. And then he makes a declaration to Moses of who he is. And in that declaration, forever shaped the way people have understood God and worshiped God. And here's what the declaration was. Exodus 34, verse 6. Yahweh, which means I am the Lord. Now remember this word. It means master. You are it. You are the one. The God of compassion and mercy, I'm slow to anger, filled with unfailing love. He's a God that's full of grace and mercy and love. But then he says, I'm also filled with faithfulness. See, I lavish unfailing love to 1,000 generations, and I forgive the iniquity, the rebellion, and the sins of people, but I do not excuse the guilty. You see, God is truth and justice, and he is faithful, yet he is loving. And from this moment on, these two truths became the core of worship for people that know God. So the psalmist would write psalms about it. Psalm 36:5, your unfailing love, O Lord, is as vast as the heavens, and your faithfulness reaches beyond the clouds. Psalm 92:2, it is good to proclaim your unfailing love in the morning and your faithfulness in the evening. Psalm 89:24 talks about, this is before Jesus ever came, talks about a day that God would reveal himself through a person. And it says, unfailing love, or my faithfulness and unfailing love will be with him. And by my authority, he will grow in power, predicting the coming of Jesus. Proverbs 16, same way, unfailing love and faithfulness make atonement for sin. And by fearing the Lord, people avoid evil. In other words, there will be a day where the faithfulness of God and the unfailing love of God would collide. And through that, sins and past and brokenness would be covered or atoned for. Not only that, but listen to this. In John chapter 1, when Jesus now comes to the earth, the writer saying this, so the word, all these promises of God, listen, became human and made his home among us. He, Jesus, was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. Other translations say grace and truth. And then look, we have seen now his glory. Remember the question that Moses asked, can I see your glory? Now we have seen his glory. The glory of the Father's one and only Son, for the law was given through Moses, but God's unfailing love, grace, and truth has come through Jesus Christ. It got fulfilled in him. Psalm 85 said it beautifully like this, also in a prophetic way. It says, unfailing love and truth have met together. Righteousness and peace have now kissed. In a beautiful display of the glory of God, Jesus comes to the earth and forever changed humanity because he embraced both of these truths. And even in this instance, he still did it. And it's not 50-50, by the way. 50-50 is still a lie. When you give a little bit of truth and a little bit of grace, it is not enough. It's 100% of both. And freedom begins at the intersection of that grace and truth. Listen to this. Freedom begins right there at the intersection of grace and truth. Notice how this was played out in the event. See, Jesus extends grace to the woman, but he also tells her, you need to stop sinning. Make a break from your past. And freedom from your past begins at this intersection when you get this grace and truth together. But here's what this means in practical terms for us. See, you've maybe been hurt by your past. Somebody hurt you, and you have to extend grace and forgive them, but it doesn't mean that there's no consequence for it. So your husband might have to still sleep on the couch. Your boyfriend or girlfriend, you might still need to break up because it's too much. You might still have consequences legally for what you've done. You might have been forgiven, but you still have pain to deal with. But you got to face that reality. See, some people have been abused. Physical, verbal, sexual. And this is really difficult. But I want you to know something. You ought to forgive. But at the same time, it does not mean that there's no consequence for the abuser. In fact, you need to tell somebody. You tell anybody. You tell the authorities. You need to tell somebody. If you have been abused in any way, listen, you are not that invaluable. You are worth more than what they are treating you of. God sees you with love and with grace, and it's okay to have him own up to it. See, a couple weeks ago, many of you have been watching the news, and you saw the story of the gymnast, Olympic gymnast, that came out, over 150 of them said that they had been abused by a doctor that was very well known, very reputable doctor. And this doctor went to court, and an army of women, in a very beautiful way, stood up and said, "Me too, this is enough, let's stop." And if you watched the court appearance of a woman named Rachel who initiated this movement, she's a follower of Jesus. I was watching this with my kids and my wife 2 weeks ago, and we were bawling on the couch because it was a beautiful display of grace and truth. She stood up in court, and before this judge and her abuser, looking at both of them, she looks at the judge and says, "Judge, what this man did was wrong and it was evil, and I want to ask you to punish him to the full extent of the law and give him life in prison." But then she looked at the abuser and he said, "What you did was evil." She looked him straight in the eye. "It was evil and it's not okay. And people are worth more than the way that you treated them. And what you did to these little girls should never be done. And what you did was evil. And God will have his justice with you, but I want you to know that he's also gracious and he can forgive even people like you. And I hope that you receive his forgiveness. And for that reason, I also forgive you." And it was so powerful, because only with God, someone can have that truth and that grace combined. And I'll tell you what, I bet you anything that that woman is experiencing more freedom than anybody who has got half of each of those, or just truth and justice and kill and whatever else, but with no grace. Because at that very intersection of grace and truth, there is tremendous amounts of freedom. We have a past, all of us, and it can be broken from our future. And before I move on from this topic, there's some young people in our auditoriums right now are listening, that maybe you are being abused or bullied, or there's people hurting you, and I want you to know that you are worth more than what they're treating you, and you need to let somebody know, because it's not okay. Listen to this. It's not okay. In fact, in the programs today, there's a little card that tells you some resources of who you can call and different options for how you can reach out for help. There's people here that have gone through divorce. God hates divorce, but he hates divorce because it hurts people that he loves. And maybe you've gone through divorce, it's already done, and you're like, "What's next now? And I don't know how to move on." And I want you to know you can move on. God gives you a fresh start. Just like he looked at this woman, he said, "Your future can be different than your past. You can remarry. Just do it differently this time. You can start over." If you are in a marriage that is suffering, you need to fight for your marriage and forgive and restore and go to counseling, and you do whatever you possibly and humanly can to restore. But there are times when someone's abusing you, or when there's unrepentant adultery, you need to step out of that marriage, and it's okay. And I want you to know that. It's scripturally okay. I'm not saying you don't fight for it. In fact, marriage is the best gift you ever give society and your children, but there are times that you need to step away, because no one should be in an abusive relationship. Just do it differently. Maybe you've sinned before in relationships, and you've broken relationships, and you've not stayed pure, and you've made decisions that you're now suffering the consequences of. Now, here's where truth and grace collide in the personal life, is you owning up to your sin. See, God gives grace to the humble, but he opposes the proud, which means when you are honest and truthful about your sin and you bring it before him, he then gives grace to your sin. But if you hide it under the rug, someday that'll be uncovered, and the pain will be so much deeper than if you uncover it yourself, because of the intersection of grace and truth, there's freedom. This is what actually differentiates us, believers and followers of Jesus, from the rest of the world. It's what should. It's that example of that gymnast on that courtroom. It's what I try to teach my kids, that when there's somebody that hates you, 100% of grace and truth means they are hating you and they are not being just and whatever else, and that's the truth. But we still love even people that hate us, because it's not 50-50. It's 100% of both. Here's the problem, though, that I think most of us feel. See, we don't believe it's possible to go and sin no more. See, culture has so contaminated our belief system that sometimes we just don't believe it's possible anymore. We've tried and failed. We lost hope. And now you're just like, I don't know if I can believe that there's a way to obey God and what he says we ought to obey in marriage and purity or whatever else and still make it happen. But I want you to understand this truth. And I know it's a little bit complex, but listen to this, okay? Your present will be your past, which will be present in your future. See, your present will someday be your past, which is going to be present in your future. In other words, what you do right now can become the new past of your future. It'll reshape the way you do life. Your past that's behind you now doesn't have to be your eternal past. It can be the past of just that time frame. You can start now decisions that'll become your new reality in the future. And she had to wrestle with this woman. She had to know, am I going to believe what Jesus is saying or not? Am I going to walk away and believe that you can have a different future than your past has had? I've had to face this tension myself, and you have as well. But I remember when I was dating my wife, when I first met her, I was actually in previous relationships that were very, very broken. And I crossed many boundaries. I got too close physically and emotionally before having a covenant relationship with them. I had a girlfriend that tried to commit suicide, and I was so burned out by all of this, and I had gone through all this pain, and I actually had to wrestle with this when I met Mandy, my wife now, because I felt drawn to her, but at the same time, I didn't want to see the pain that I had experienced in the past, and I had to really come to the grips with this. Am I going to believe that there's a way that is possible to obey what I believe to be true about the scriptures and still have a good relationship with her? And I remember that in spite of, we had to look past our brokenness, our past, not having many examples, and a tremendous amount of cultural pressure. And we decided to take some really radical steps. And it was because we were very honest with our weaknesses. And I remember talking to her about this, and we got together, and it was our conviction that the scriptures teach that you should reserve yourself sexually pure before you're married, before the covenant of marriage. And so based on that conviction for us, we wanted to have our relationship be pure before God. But I knew that that would be pretty radical, and I had to be very honest about what tempts me, and she had to be honest about what tempts her. Jesus said, avoid temptation, not avoid sin. So we had this conversation, what causes you to be in the temptation zone? And for us, I said to her, look, I'm just going to be honest with you, I'm very weak. And you kiss my neck and I'm gone. And I touch your belly and I'm gone. Anything beyond kissing off the mouth, for me, it was like I'm already in temptation zone. If we're in the dark, in a place by ourselves, and there's nobody else around, the doors are closed, I am in temptation zone already. And so we decided to make boundaries outside of all of those. We only kissed in the mouth. We only were alone in daylight and in public places for a year and a half of our dating relationship. And it was the most guiltless and free relationship I've ever had in my life. And I believe that my 15 years of marriage now has been blessed because of that one decision. Now, here's why I'm saying this to you. All of us have different mistakes of our past. I have my own. But today can be the day that you decide to make it different for your future. You see, you don't have to wait, and you have to face the tension for you. What does it look like to obey God at his word, to really be honest about our weaknesses, to say, God, I'm going to do whatever you say to do and believe that your ways are true, but that there's grace for the journey. You see, at this point, it's really important for us to know even how this applies to all the dimensions of whatever the tension is in your own heart. You might be in a bad marriage already, and you're like at the brink of divorce, and you don't even know if it's worth it anymore, and you're in the consequences of your mistakes, but the choices you make today are setting the ground for your future and for your kids and for the next generation. You might be single, and you have to make that choice. And it might be radical, but am I going to do things God's way in order to have the grace that he wants to offer? Or am I just going to be a 50-50 person that never really finds freedom from that trap? Will I trust God enough? Maybe you're the person you're with is sinned against you and you want to forgive, but you don't want them to feel like they're being caught. And you just need to say, God, I'm going to trust that justice is yours and not mine. I want to invite you at all of our campuses for a minute to close your eyes, because I want to walk through for just a minute what we call the gospel. And maybe you've already followed Jesus for a while and you know what I'm talking about, but the gospel hasn't been deep enough that it actually moves you. And I want to remind you of these truths, because this is where freedom can come in our lives. See, God is faithful and uncompromising and perfect, which means he has to be just. And a just God, like a just judge, has to punish sin or they're not just at all. But see, God is also unfailing in his love. He's full of grace and mercy, which is why he took that punishment that we deserve of our sin upon himself in Jesus, and he fulfilled his own justice. The grace and the truth of God colliding in Jesus. And like that woman that day, we have to face the same tension. When we look at Jesus, who's offering both truth and grace, and say, Lord, the same confession that was taught to Moses on the mountain, God is Lord, it means master. I'm gonna give you all. I'm gonna surrender my relationship, my desires, my sin of my past. I'm gonna put it in your hands. I'm gonna face my own mistakes and not pretend like they don't exist. I'm gonna be truthful. But I'm gonna come to you because you're a God that forgives and loves and has unconditional love toward me. And if you just confess in your heart and believe, confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that Jesus Christ is Lord and Master, you will be saved, the scripture says. There is freedom for you. We're gonna sing a song in a minute, but before we do that, I'm gonna tell you a couple things that are really important and practical at all of our campuses. In your programs, I told you there's a resource for you with some links and some phone numbers and some options of who you can go to for help. Also at the hub today, at all of our campuses, in the lobby or outside at South, there are people that can pray for you. There are prayer team, and this might be a great day to have just a combined power of prayer in your life. Also, Grow Track today is about freedom. And see, true freedom doesn't come unless we're connected in community. You might be a hand, but you can't be a hand unless you're connected to the arm. Sometimes the freedom you're trying to walk into of grace and truth will not come unless you're connected with others, which is why we push Echo Group so much. This is the day to sign up for those, because it starts this week. Don't let this day end without joining community. There's options at the hub. There's booklets in your hand. Go and find a group for you. And then if you don't know where to start, go to Alpha. Alpha is one of the best groups we have, because it goes through the basics of our faith and how to make those be a part of our life, and that's where freedom comes in. I want to invite you to stand with me for a minute. We're going to sing a song that says, In Your Presence. I want to ask you, just in the declaration of this song, to align your heart and make Jesus the master, and whatever it is that he's stirring in you, to use this time to just make that confession before him. So Father, we come to you now knowing that you're a God that is truthful and faithful, but you're gracious and merciful and unfailing in your love. And we have a past, but our past can be broken because of you, Jesus. And on that cross, we declare now that sin has no power over us, that there is freedom in the name of Jesus, that where your presence is, there is restoration and freedom and new beginnings and a fresh start. And just like you looked at that woman and you says, I don't condemn you, go and sin no more. Would you look at us now? Would you help us to receive that same grace and the same truth in Jesus' name?